WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. And I think we're playing this, Larry, for our state representative.
This is the Kinks Better Things that Larry and I grew up together. So Larry's got a great memory. Well, I'm glad that we were able to play a little bit of a musical tribute for you. And big fan of the Kinks myself. I'm more so of the, I like Father Christmas. One of my favorite Christmas songs.
Authentic, urban Christmas song.
Have yourself a merry, merry Christmas. Have yourself a good time. Christmas. But remember, the kids have got nothing while you're drinking down your wine.
How many times have you seen the Kinks?
I saw them about 14 times. Wow. And they may have a reunion.
Yes.
Knock on wood. Wow. They're already in the news saying they might get back together this upcoming, might be summertime.
Somewhere a Weymouth mayor is raising his fist in the air because you're talking about rock and roll. We all know who we're talking about here. None other than Bob Hedlund, who... We used to know as the rock and roll senator, who the guy, anytime he was in here, would talk about music like the first concert he went to back in 1971.
Right.
It's the kind of a guy he is. But thank you very much for coming in. How were your holidays?
Couldn't be better. I had both families together, very relaxed Christmas Eve brunch to have everyone together. And it's been nice. We always do a pre-New Year's celebration to get people together just to... enjoy one another's company and fully rested and ready for better things for the introduction to 2017.
See, you know what's funny is I know that there was a conversation about doing something about Halloween, having Halloween on the weekends. I think having Christmas and New Year's
on Halloween. I thought it was a fantastic idea.
We should maybe practice it. Could we put forth a bill in 2017 about that?
Yeah.
I'm kidding, of course. Another thought was to have you in, as I've had other legislators in, towards the end of November, just to kind of put the legislative session behind. I know that the session itself ended in July, but informals have carried on.
Right.
And just right around the corner, 24 to 48 hours from now,
Wednesday, we'll have our swearing-in ceremony. We'll have the governor coming in to swear us in, and looking forward to it.
Are you looking forward to it?
I am. Yes, it's the ceremony itself, there's a lot of pomp and circumstance, could be shortened a little bit, but it's exciting for the first time. And for the other times, you take it all in and look through the eyes of new folks coming along to say how exciting it can be. And it does bring, when you're standing there and you know that four people who were state representatives before us in a different capacity were signers of the Declaration of Independence. And we know that John Kennedy gave a speech from right three rows from where I sit before he became president. You take that all in and you're saying, you know, we are supposed to do great things in the short time that we're representatives. So I'm looking forward to another exciting start.
If you were to kind of put the last legislative session into perspective, what was some of the highlights that you feel that you were involved with, whether it was something you authored, whether it was something that you helped champion? Sure. I know there were a number of things, because sure. You're on here on a regular basis talking about a lot of different things. It's not because, well, you love the radio station. I can't say that, but you do it because you're like the town crier. You want to get the word out there about the stuff.
And we are so fortunate because there are so many talented people in Marshfield, Scituate, and the entire South Shore who we really, the best part of the job from A to Z, people come in and educate us, as we did a few years ago during a model bill for those young people who have autism. We're now working on zoning reform issues because Peter Foreman came and just spoke to us a few weeks ago about how we need to have more housing to make sure that our economy grows. My personal highlight for this year was a bill that I authored working with people on the South Shore, though it's called the Promote Prevent Bill, because we all know, we hear so many circumstances where people have passed from an overdose, and we know how much needs to be done for treatment, so much that needs to be done for long-term recovery. But one thing we read, 97% of the money that we spend that deals with the issues of addiction are all what are more or less called downstream. It's people after they've had a run-in with the police or in jail, or it's treatment, or it's long-term recovery. Only 3% of all those dollars go upstream, trying to prevent people from using substances in the first place. So legislation that I co-authored with a woman named Cheryl Bartlett, who was the Department of Public Health commissioner for years, and a gentleman who works for me, Ben Thomas, who just lost a loved one to an opiate overdose just 2 years ago, that passed. We're already putting together a really impressive group of people who will start meeting in February, and we'll talk about things that are going to make an impact upstream, preventing people from getting in the throes of addiction in the first place. So that was a personal highlight to me. In that same arena of activity, a bill that the governor championed after doing a listening tour around the state was a bill that is also going to cut down on opiate abuse. Everything from talking to doctors, making sure now doctors can only prescribe 7 pills when someone's first being released, unless there's some chronic pain issue. Finding ways that what we already do. Part of that bill that I wrote into it is modeling a drug drop-off box, which we do here in Marshfield already. Mm-hmm. Thing that was championed by Matt McDonough and by Chief Tavares years ago, but making sure that every single community will have a location that once people look in their medicine cabinet, saying if they don't need that medicine anymore, get it out, and you can drop it off. Virtually every single police station by the end of this year, we hope, will have one of these drug drop-off boxes. So those are a couple of things that I thought were very productive for this year.
Would there be more, if you're looking to put more money into the fiscal 2018 budget, would it be more so towards education? Would it be more so towards getting the word out? Because I kind of think that some people still want to look at the situation and not admit that there's a problem. Right. I could tell you a prominent individual on the South Shore that it was a news story in 2016 from a prominent family that died, and it wasn't really reported as to why the individual died.
Right.
But then it was found out that the individual died from an overdose. And then recently there was a story done where a member of the family says, this is an issue. This is why this individual died, and we want to champion the cause and at least get word out there. Is it a matter of getting word out there, whether it's a promotional campaign, to talk about getting the drugs out of your medicine cabinets and you know, the importance of that? Because you know that if you could put out a positive message and keep putting it out there in many forms and fashions, even on social media, it's something that'll eventually hit home, and it'll penetrate and saturate.
It's all of the above, everything you talked about. And thankfully, WATD, you do so much all the time to bring focus to this, because there are programs, I know you have programs that happen every Wednesday night here talking about it. One is to address the stigma of any type of addiction.
Yep. Common Ground with Jim Hall.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep. The other is to make sure that people realize that, because it is so complicated. One, we talked about, you know, educating doctors that the pharmaceutical industry really got into the heads of everybody. If anyone goes to the hospital, if you've been there recently, Peter, if you've been there, Kevin, and you'll see they have a little thing there that has all the happy faces, yes, the down to the unhappy faces, and they say, what's your pain level from, you know, this to this? That was a construct of the pharmaceutical industry, because they wanted everyone to have more prescriptions written. You know, the idea was you can't have any pain. Oh, heaven forbid you have pain when you're leaving the hospital. And the hospitals get rated. If they write and say, you know, I left and I was feeling really uncomfortable, they can get a demerit. So we have to reverse that. You know, that's only been in the last 10 or 15 years, this whole idea of saying you can never have any pain. And therefore, doctors that see you, oh, a little pain, prescription, there you go. So that's part of what we're trying to get to. Yep. The other is for kids when they're really young. We have to start programs second grade, third grade, fourth grade about healthy bodies, about what you put in your body. Could be things about saying not to have too much Mary Lou's here right in front of me.
Easy, pal.
Could be about, well,
don't touch my vice.
I got my sugar all around me.
Okay.
But those
kind of 1.5 calorie Tic Tacs.
But really, the idea is of when you're younger, exercise. When you're younger, care for what you eat. And then
as a little kid, 4 food groups. No,
yes.
I think that's changed now.
It has. That doesn't have the same kind of focus. But it's so that as people get older, when they're 5th grade, 6th grade, you have to start talking about drugs, because there's just so much that is out there. Realizing when we were all kids, really to be involved in sports, the idea was keep them active in sports. You won't get into trouble. You stay away from drugs. Now it's actually a risk factor. If you play hard and you're getting injured, and then kids are getting prescribed. So it's a very complex issue, but really thankfully, I'm always proud of how we do bipartisan things down here in the South Shore, and definitely this is something where the governor gave a real major direction, and I think we're making a real difference.
You guys need like a schoolhouse rock type of a campaign, you know, like I'm Just a Bill, My Hero Zero, stuff like that, but you do it for drugs and
sure.
For, you know, nutrition.
You're right.
You can take that idea and run with
it. Sure, but think of
sharing and throwing them out there.
Think of the ads when it came to littering when we were kids watching TV 38.
The crying Indian.
That's
still
exactly
stuck in my head.
That's exactly right.
Every time I go to throw, I'm like, oh, that Indian's going to cry. Throw it away.
That's it. Creature Devil feature, and then the Indian came on, or the Native American, right? We
the flying turtle. Who knew?
Yes, there we go. So it's all learned.
Chimera, by the way. Sorry. My bad. Private jokes here, folks. Just details from our childhoods back in the day, WLVI, and some of the things that you saw on TV. But that's good. Just want to kind of get a curious idea as to where the folks who are elected up on Beacon Hill, they are doing. Where does the fight against the opioid epidemic, where does it place to the new dilemma, and that is recreational marijuana,
right,
where it's something that this is what the citizens in the Commonwealth want. I know that there was something passed in recent days, signed, to kind of delay, push it off 6 months.
Sure.
Some folks kind of got upset and they're protesting.
Right.
Where does that fall in line with the fight on opiate? Are those two separate? Or is there a conversation where there's a concern?
Part of it adds to the complexity, because at a time when we are trying to cut down on substances and addictions, you know, clearly there's a warning that comes now with a new drug. Now, I'm wearing both hats. You know, part of the thing is we realize this is what our citizens have said. Our citizens have said loud and clear, we don't want people to be criminally charged if they have a small amount of marijuana. Saying very loud that
we decriminalized it a couple of years ago. If you had a small amount, it would be a fine.
Right. And by the way, that small amount is 1 ounce of pot. Do you know how much 1 ounce of pot is?
No, Jim, how much? Remember, this is radio. Nobody can say it.
You can get 40 joints. It probably depends how
really?
If you make a blunt. Yeah, 1 ounce.
Was it something you guys didn't say? Was it like
Larry is over to my left.
Here,
Larry. So okay. It actually was a lot of marijuana. So here's the I think what we're trying to make sure is to maintain the spirit of the law, of the things that you already point out. We already did pass. We already decriminalized marijuana.
Right.
We've already allowed, and I've helped people who legitimately are benefited from medicinal marijuana. Absolutely no doubt that there's some major benefits that can
come. There is a benefit to it.
But now we have a duty in the legislature to make sure that what was just passed in November, we have a duty to make sure that we're protecting public health, public safety. And as any legislation, when it goes through at the State House, things go through different phases, you know, different committees, you kick the tires. This was passed. We definitely put a little bit of the brakes on, saying we're going to keep the spirit of it, but we need 6 more months to make sure that we know how to implement it. And I do think you'll see issues like edibles. My goodness, if you put, we've had people come and educate us, and they put side by side Skittles with another product that they call like Skattles, you cannot tell the difference about which one would have the THC, which has the marijuana. If you put things Starburst side by side, you don't know. They call it another name. We will absolutely have to act about edibles to make sure they're very clearly delineated so people know. Come up with ways to keep them out of the hands of kids. One benefit, I think, of legalization is we would hope we can be able to have a product that has a lower THC content. When we all were kids, the THC content of marijuana was far
low.
Very low.
It was very low. These days, it's been cross-pollinated. Yeah.
And you don't know, part of the lesson about the opiate crisis is you don't know what the hell is in the stuff that people are selling you. Right. So maybe the legalization, right. That will be one way.
Talking about, you know, overdose, fentanyl.
Yes.
I mean, it's a big killer these days.
It absolutely is. That will be, I think, Kevin, you'll see by March, I think, of this year, March or April, you'll see legislation that we'll be acting upon trying to get our arms around this new industry. Because the legislation was written by the marijuana industry. This was not your
right. We know that there's a Cannabis Control Commission that'll be put in place, right. The state treasurer. We've had her on the program. And again, we're speaking with the state representative, Jim Cantwell, representing the 4th Plymouth District. I'm hogging the microphone.
No, you're doing a great job. This is very interesting.
Okay, all right.
But one of the questions I'd like to ask, you did back it off 6 months.
Right.
Are you going to address the tax issue also?
We absolutely would, because we'll be creating, one, just to make sure what people are going to be selling. There's going to have to now be a group that tests and everything. You have to be careful what kind of pesticides go into these things. So, there will be, in Colorado, they have locations where you can buy by certain THC content. So you have to have people who will be involved with that.
So it's more like proof for alcohol. It's the same thing, right?
Exactly. And I think that was the drive that I heard most people say when they were voting for it. They said, we want to make you regulate it like alcohol. And I said, well, okay, then we're going to have to go back and try. You cannot buy when you go to Blanchard's or a local liquor store here, you can't buy
some moonshine.
No. Yeah, that's right.
You buy moonshine.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
One sip will blind you for 2 days.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't want that stuff.
Can't have that.
Yep. So there'll be a role, and for people who were worried about on both sides. My wife and I co-founded a group called Marshfield Facts here that families, adolescents, communities together against substances. We see people whose lives are being very much harmed by using certain substances. So we want to do this well and do this right.
We just got a couple more minutes with you before we welcome our next guest to the table. Is David Wheeler is awaiting in the bullpen, warming up as we speak. And Jim, actually, if you wanted to sit in on the conversation,
sure,
more than welcome to us. We're going to speak with Dave about one of his articles that I found very interesting, a columnist for Gatehouse Media, Generation Gullible.
Okay.
We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll let Dave kind of break down the whole idea and the genesis of the column. And being a guy who's you're kind of a news hound yourself.
Sure, of course.
And a local leader who pays attention to the news, you might want to kind of weigh in on it.
Of course,
as an elected official.
Sure.
You had a breakfast recently. It was a gathering called A Seat at the Table. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Tell us about the purpose of the event.
What I do every few months, and some years we do more of these sessions than others, but bring together business leaders, folks here in the South Shore who may not get a chance to go into Boston. We try to bring distinguished leaders down here to the South Shore and talk about issues of the day. So we had Governor Patrick come a few times, former Treasurer Steve Grossman came, the Commissioner of Insurance Joe Murphy came one year when people were talking about how double-digit increases in health insurance were killing the economy. Greg Bialecki was the Secretary for Economic Development. The most recent program that we had, this time we decided to do kind of a menu approach. We had Phil Johnston, who was a former U.S. Regional Secretary for Health and Human Services. He talked about health insurance and what we might expect with a new Congress and with a new president coming in. We had the state auditor, Suzanne Bump, touched upon marijuana legalization, some issues that were related there, and talked about good government and openness in government. Treasurer Tom O'Brien, the state treasurer, the county treasurer, that is, talked about a new group that he has founded dealing with Lyme disease.
Oh, yeah.
That was really interesting. And Peter Foreman, who was the chief of staff to Governor Swift, now is the president or the director of the South Shore Chamber of Commerce. He did a fascinating talk about a vision for our regional economy. And one thing he touched upon was the need for more market-rate housing for young people to stay in our Commonwealth and to make sure here in the South Shore, he said, our workforce is really aging out. So bringing those folks together with people throughout the South Shore, Peter comes to every one of these, is one of our most respected local business leaders, and it's really helpful for us to be able to make sure that we do that give and take back and forth for people to learn from one another.
Okay. Last thing I'll ask you, we know we're just a couple of weeks removed from the budget process we know the governor will put forth. House 1, is it?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Expecting any surprises? Had your ear to the ground to get an idea as to what we may see this coming year for the new fiscal year?
Yeah, for 2018? For me, all things being local, I'm on Ways and Means. We just had a consensus revenue hearing where we had a number of experts who were testifying about why our revenues were off last year. At a time, by the way, when our unemployment is the lowest it's been for about 20 years. And at a time when sales, things are going fairly well, consumer confidence is pretty high. My first thing I'm thinking about looking at Peter was making sure things like the Talking Information Center continue the funding, because we are concerned. The testimony that we were given was we're going to have a slower rate of increase in revenues this year. Every single person testified that it's just uncertainty is never good for consumers. Our economy, 70% of our economy is consumer confidence. So people right now are feeling a little uncertain, even though unemployment's so low. And one of the things that keeps coming back is all of us do this. We all buy things online. We've lost about 20% of sales tax revenue in the last decade just to online sales. So it makes a crunch for state budgets. So the one thing I will tell you, I just would expect it to be a very lean budget. We don't know yet. You and I talked the last time about some of the 9C cuts that the governor made.
Yep.
We'll hear what revenues will come forward from December in the next week or two, and we'll be in a position to decide which things can be added back in. But we have to make sure programs like TIC that have been doing great work for over 30 years are the first in my mind to make sure we protect.
Well, thank you for continuing to be a beacon of information when it comes time to let the folks here, not only in your district, but on the South Shore, know what's going on. You're always somebody who's in to share information or at least educate people on stuff that's coming. Thank you for this program,
because I appreciate always getting a chance in depth to talk about things, and obviously every day in the news. So thank you. We just saw David Skill after 30 years semi-retire. So it's nice to see a number of people that can always make sure WATD is the best bullhorn to make sure people know what's happening here in the South Shore.
And we like to pass it around.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, you're gonna stick for a few minutes here. We're going to step aside for a few moments. When we come back, we're going to speak with our good friend David Wheeler and talk a little bit about Generation Gullible here on 95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD. Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. And again, we thank the representative, Jim Cantwell, who's going to sit. He's going to sit on this. We value Jim's opinion. We'll let him kind of be a pseudo co-host for this segment, anyways, and we welcome Mr. David Wheeler, who is, it was a Gatehouse Media or strictly the Enterprise?
I guess you could say it's Gatehouse. It's Enterprise and the Ledger, and then a lot of the really hyper local ones pick it up.
Okay, which is really cool. Now I'm fortunate enough that I get the email as it's the day it's published. And is it Monday or Tuesday?
It's Mondays.
And usually you have some thought-provoking articles. And I thought this was a good one. Because when I look at our younger gen, I don't know if it's just my age and I'm just, I remember back in the day. I don't want to be that person. But I see a lot of times when you see trends and you see what younger people, how they're doing things, and you scratch your head and you're like, it definitely is different times. And the article that you did is called Generation Gullible. And it was something that I heard on AP a couple of weeks ago when they were talking about it. It was kind of the big thing, fake news. And I think a lot of people who have this thing called common sense can kind of pick out fake news, but not everybody is blessed with common sense. And a lot of people, if they see a little bit of a nugget, they'll run with it. I'll give you an example. We know 2016 was an awful year when it came to celebrity deaths. But a lot of times, you pay attention to social media, someone would post a celebrity death from like 5 or 6 years ago. People are going, oh my God, he's... No, what are you talking about? That person, that poor person passed away 10 years ago. It's not what it is. But that's just a small microcosm. But what led you to finally say, I got to put pen to paper, and this is something I just want to kind of just share with the readers?
That's a great question. And thank you for your compliments. I appreciate it. You know, I canceled my subscription to the New York Times after the election.
Gasp.
And I did it. I did it not because Donald Trump won. I did it because they lulled people into this false. Every day on my iPhone, it was 92% chance Hillary. Not, you know, 91% chance Hillary. And to realize that they were so wrong really got me thinking about it. And I was like, you know, that's... I depend on that. Like, to me, that was, you know, rock solid journalism. And then when I started looking into some of the fake news stories and things that were popping up, I couldn't believe it that people fell for some of these things. I mentioned in the article the one about the Pope endorsing Donald Trump. I mean, it's just foolish. And you mentioned earlier about common sense. I don't think it's so common anymore.
Well, you can't go to Walmart and buy it, that's for sure.
Yeah, you sure can't. And one of the things that really drives me crazy, too, is, and I experienced this firsthand writing for The Enterprise, which now they have a paywall. People don't read the article. They read the headline, and then they run with it as fact, when, in fact, sometimes you read the article, and it actually is not what the headline, you know, is talking about at all.
Right.
And I just am seeing all, and you look at the percentages of people that get their news from Facebook, 44%. You get your news from Facebook, and think about, Facebook is designed to give you something that you like. You like it. You click things, like. And when you click like, it gives you more things like that.
Right.
And less challenging you. And I think that's really the shame of the whole thing. You know, my other hat that I wear is I'm a high school principal. And kids just take things as gospel sometimes. You know, someone tweets something out and it's true. And millions of people have read it and repeated it and said it. And then if there's ever even a correction, you know, it's months down the road. And it's, you know, some, you know, journalist trying to set the record straight and nobody's listening to him or her.
Almost like the Flategate.
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
You could say that, right?
Sure.
You know, you had the four-letter network was out reporting a certain thing. They never retracted.
Right.
I think they did apologize, but it was like at 3 a.m.
Right.
During a pair of promos and commercials. Right. They kind of slid it in there.
Right. Right. And you just look, there's such inherent bias in things now, too. And it cuts across political spectrum. You know, just because I was shocked at Donald Trump winning doesn't mean that I don't see that. There is, you know, some liberal bias in the media, and there's some conservative bias in the media. And personally, I see it creeping into a lot of, at least the writing that I do, I'm very upfront about that. This is my opinion. This is, you know, I try to put what I'm basing it on. I try to sprinkle some facts in there, and you hope that people are invested enough that they'll research it a little bit on their own and educate themselves and come up with their own, you know, opinion on the matter. But that doesn't seem to be what's happening. It seems to be people come up with their opinion, and then discount any facts that don't support their opinion and seek out facts that do support their opinion, and now you can find them, and half the time they're not even real. And that's scary.
Either one of you two gentlemen want to weigh, Jim, do you want to weigh in this?
Absolutely. And this is a great article. It's just the first time I'm reading of it. But I'd highlight, your democracy only succeeds or best succeeds when people make informed decisions. And to make an informed decision, you have to have accurate information, which is you know, we always, even here for WATD, you make sure every time people want to come in, they want to have their chance at the microphone. People every day have a chance to come in and be heard on op-ed
piece. More than one side.
Yeah, there are. And I, as a high school principal, when you just were stating, I remember being in high school, and it was an eye-opener when our teachers would say, just because it's in that book doesn't mean it's true. And they talked about the value of being able to have different forms of information. But now, my political hat, you guys remember 2 years ago, we had in campaigns all in Massachusetts, there were these outside groups that funded these attack ads that said that, you name the rep, that they were forcing veterans out of their homes and giving those homes to illegal aliens. And the mail came out. I remember laughing, saying, oh, who's going to believe that? And oh, my goodness. You know, I had a guy follow me home one night screaming at me and other people. It, that kind of thing I saw the power of that. So that's very interesting the way you're saying in this election, being on the internet, there really is a real challenge, I think, for our democratic institutions if the Russians can be involved sending in, you know.
In a couple of days, Donald's going to actually give you the truth.
We've got to figure in the changing world that we have how to educate our citizens to know the difference between fake news and real news. And then your issue is don't just listen to the people you agree with. You know, try to seek out others who have different opinions. Maybe that will change yours, or maybe there's a way that you find a common ground that's better for us as a whole. But these kinds of things, when people only read what they want to hear, makes it very, very difficult to govern, because you have these two poles that just never want to meet in the middle.
Right. And that's clearly where we're at right now. The follow-up to this piece that I did a couple weeks afterwards was right around Trump dismissing the Russian hacker thing, just saying, well, it didn't happen because I don't believe it happened. Well, that's a form of the same thing. It's, you know, you can't just tweet out something and it's true. You can't just say something multiple times and then it's true. And I'm afraid that a lot of people are falling for that now. And it's important to have the voice on the other side saying, well, is this really true? You know, Facebook is, you know, talking about, we're actually doing some things about this, about maybe labeling things as untrustworthy sources or something like that. And I understand that's a slippery slope. I do get that. Who gets to decide if something is, you know?
Well, you're talking about an entity that has admittedly leaned one way or the other. They have admitted that they will be more liberal or conservative from time to time, depending on, you know, I mean, and they get to make the judgment call.
Yeah. You can also, and this is very interesting, you have to, you know, research, Google how to do it, but Facebook has every one of us in this room labeled as something. And
right.
You can click on, it's deep in, but you can get deep into your settings, right. You know, and it will say, are you, and they had me as very liberal, which, okay, yeah, that's true. But I don't mind seeing a conservative piece come across my news feed because it stimulates my own thinking, too. And it makes me think about things in different ways. And that's not happening if you're labeled as very liberal.
Right. Sure.
You know?
See, it's funny because I pride myself on trying to be uber neutral.
Sure.
Where I am not in the camp of the liberal, in the camp of the conservative. But I've been accused by, I'll go to a Democratic gathering and like, you're an agent for the other side. And I've gone to Republican stuff and they're like, you speak both languages, huh? And it's, you know, you hear it. And I'm like, no, my job is not to be somebody who is in either camp.
So it's funny you mentioned earlier that on the planning board, I have the pleasure of being the current chair of the Brockton Planning Board. And you remember you were there when the power plant came before us, the Brockton Power.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot tell you how frustrating it was for me as the chair, because I had these environmentalists that were really vitriolic in some of the things that they were saying to me and yelling out and accusing me of. And I would go home and say to myself, I fundamentally actually agree with them. I wish they would stop attacking me like that, but they had pigeonholed me into this. I was appointed by a mayor that was pro-power plant.
Yep.
And somehow we've lost sight of, when you look at citizen government does work, and you have to just let people make up their own minds. And, you know, that came down when you look at the power plant and you say, well, there's a set of criteria. If it meets the criteria, it's not our job to judge whether the power plant is a good thing or a bad thing. It's our job to say, does it meet these nine criteria or these six criteria, whatever they are. But then you throw the partisanship into it and the people on different sides, and then the emotion comes in.
Sure.
And then you look at some of those. Even as the planning board chair, you know, at the time we asked for an outside audit, a neutral person that had never had anything to do with the city of Brockton, because we as the planning board were concerned about all the conflicting messages we were getting, including some from the news. So we had a hard time making up our minds, and we had to actually go out and pay. You know, the city had to pay to get a neutral opinion, which I think ultimately was the right thing to do.
Unfortunately, with some people, there's no gray area.
Right.
You're either with us or you're against us.
Right.
And there are people who have that mentality, and it's very difficult to navigate when you're trying to be somebody who is being a neutral observer, somebody who is trying to get an idea of where it's going on. And if you don't say,
yeah, I agree with you, or no, I don't agree with you, then automatically there's an assumption made.
And do you think, too, for everybody here, do we have such a distrust right now of institutions where people are saying if there's something on WATD, but they don't agree with that, so that they're going to distrust? You know, you just said people will pick one side or the other, saying that they think that you've got a bias. Yeah. We don't have a Walter Cronkite. Think when Walter Cronkite nationally, everybody would trust what he had to say. Right. Or Edward Murrow. Think of Murrow at a time with McCarthy, that he was the one that said, you know, sir, do you have no shame? And that was one of the times that people took another look. I don't know that we have
that. Yeah, who is that person now? I don't think there is one.
I don't think so either.
Well, that's where the mainstream media has been taken over by corporations where they put their mind into it. Like we're talking about the fake news, and most of that was clickbait stuff.
Yeah.
So they put that, whatever, the guy had no pants on yesterday, and to get you to click on it, and it's probably a paragraph this big, and you're looking at Venus ads all bolt down both sides, yeah, or right, Victoria's right. Secret ads.
Yeah. Right.
You know? Right, so, right. But how can we control something like that when we want free speech?
So I read something that was really interesting a couple months ago, might have been a year ago now. The most trusted man in America was Jon Stewart. And if you think about that, a comedy show
right.
became the most trusted news person that there was, only because he was skeptical of everything.
Right.
And I do think you notice a void with him gone. Yep. You really do, because he certainly, you know, the emperor has no clothes, and he had no problem putting it right out there and saying it. But the other folks can't do it because they've tainted themselves. I mean, you had Dan Rather,
right?
You know, his career. What a sure. shame at mm-hmm. the end. You had the what's the guy there? The
Brian
the
helicopter, Williams.
Brian Williams. Right.
Brian yeah. Williams. Sure, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and these are people.
False that, reports. Yeah.
These right. are people that appeared trustworthy in the beginning, and they weren't. I remember as a kid, I was heartbroken when Mike Barnacle got in trouble.
Yeah. Oh, plagiarism. Yeah. That's right.
When yeah. making stuff up. Sure. I was hard, because he wrote some of the best stuff, and I realize now he should have been a fiction writer.
But he was back. He was the one that was asking the questions about Aleppo to who is the third-party candidate. You know, it was interesting that Mike Barnacle was right next to them. But you know, one thing that I've noted, too, because I do a program with young people for interns, and that's why I love what you do for your profession, and I say our country was formed on people having some skepticism of government, pushing back, you know, testing what people are having to say, using their mind. We have ventured far now into more of a cynical time where it's healthy to be skeptical, but you can't say every single person involved in the planning board is a bum, or everyone doing radio somehow is tainted, or everyone doing my job somehow is on the take. You know, those people are so cynical now of any of our public institutions. It's going to take a lot of time, I think, to work it back and to gain people's trust. It's easier to do at the local level.
Yeah.
But you know, at the national level, I'm not sure what the answer is, but I'm glad you're starting the conversation about how we need to pay attention to what we're getting at for our news.
What was some of the things that you offered as suggestions to get us back on the right track? Were there any suggestions in the article that you can recall that?
Well, the first thing, I am in favor of some type of a third-party verification of facts. And you saw some of the campaigns and the debates, they were experimenting with that, where they had some historians and fact checkers live, you know, as the candidate was either lying or not lying, they were kind of verifying it or not verifying it. I think you're going to need more of that. Again, that's a slippery slope. Who gets to do that? I think a lot of it, you know, not to, you know, feather my own nest with schools, but it comes down to schools. It comes down to, you know, why should I tell you the answer? You should be able to go tell me
absolutely.
The answer. Right. The information is out there, but it's hard work to find if it's the correct information sure. or not. And I have to wonder, what are we doing in colleges, you know, when we assign a research paper and we say, well, 10 pages, 10-page research paper.
Double space.
Well, what does that mean?
10 pages, double space.
But what does that mean? You know, can you learn about the death penalty in 3 pages? I think you probably can if you have credible enough sources. So I really think we need to spend a lot more time on that. There's an interesting thing, I think I mentioned it in this column or the last one, I can't remember, about 80-something percent of middle school students, they showed an ad that said sponsored content.
Right.
And they took it as news.
Right.
They felt that, and it was, this person is trying to sell you something right. and right. sway your opinion. And 80% of them, and it was labeled sponsored ad, right. and 80% of them didn't understand that it was a sponsored ad.
And it's funny you mentioned that, because nowadays, I don't know if anybody has noticed it these days, but a lot more commercials that you see, especially if it's like a car dealer or something, is they're saying, these are real customers. Have you been noticing that?
Yeah, I have noticed that, yes.
You've been noticing that, is that they're showing that more and more, that this... Or it'll say, person's an actor.
Yeah,
they're starting to do that more.
Right.
So.
Right. Well, maybe.
Maybe the sun is shining a little bit brighter.
Well, I hope so. It's the best disinfectant, that's for sure.
Amen. Yeah, I was hoping you'd pick up on that. Well, we'd love to have you back, as we've had you. This isn't your first time here. No. Now, did you do one this week, or do you have one in the works?
I took this week off. I took vacation off. I'm playing around with one for next Monday.
Okay. We'll be looking forward to pages of the Enterprise, the Patriot Ledger.
Thank you. Yeah.
Mr. David Wheeler, not only a columnist, but also a public servant. Mm-hmm. So we thank you.
Thank you.
We'll definitely have you back in a couple of times more in 2017.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Excellent. All right. We are going to step aside. And when we come back, this is your chance to kind of test the theory as to what you've done with your New Year's resolution, and did you actually set one up that is going to fail, or are you DOA? We'll be right back in just a few moments here on 95.9 WATD. You're listening to Monday Night Talk.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com, the South Shore's news, weather, and traffic station. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD. Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
All right. Welcome back for the second hour of Monday Night Talk. Coming up in this hour, Peter, we have Matthew DeMar. He's a political analyst gentleman who is all about a video that he put together regarding Donald Trump that went viral. We'll talk with him about that.
Yep.
Automotive expert Junior D'Amato.
He's my dad's buddy. That guy's awesome.
Dad's buddy, absolutely. Yep. But first, time for us to get honest with ourselves.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about the new year. Now, Peter, did you say that you made a New Year's resolution?
No, the point was is I didn't make one. So I didn't make a resolution. I broke it.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, because I was going to make one, and I fell asleep about 8:30 on, Saturday night. I woke up Sunday morning, I forgot.
Well, the idea is, it's, I don't know where the idea of making a New Year's resolution came from personally, but I thought, it's something that we hear, we say commonly here in our culture. And I thought, a good friend, Dr. Kate Roberts, we had her on to talk a little bit about the holidays.
Yep.
And I thought I would have her back on once again. She's on the phone line joining us. Hello, Dr. Kate. How are you on this Monday night? Is Dr. Kate there? Or did we lose her?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year,
Dr. Kate.
Happy New Year. And so I'm trying to set things up here in regards to New Year's resolutions. Now, I have no idea where the idea came from. Would you happen to know?
I don't know officially, but I do think that people associate the new year with a new beginning.
Mm, okay.
And because of that, they see it as an opportunity to change. It could happen any day, these changes, but something about the start of a new year, you hear people saying, you're going to have a better year this year. This year will be different. Last year wasn't that great. That kind of thing.
Mm. Well, my curious question is how often do you have a chance to speak with people about around this time of year when they want to set goals for change and they want to enter a new calendar year regarding making changes? How often do you talk with people about it?
I mean, I think almost every person I see has that intention. I have that intention. People ask me, what's your resolution? I think a lot of us think that way. We might not say it out loud, but people who come to me often do. And I think what's hard is that they don't really know how to do it. Just because it's a new year doesn't mean they know how to change more easily. Change is so hard.
Change is very hard, and some people aren't readily accepting of change. Does that
make
sense?
Well, how hard it is anyway. They want to change, but they don't really want to go through the work.
Mm. Yeah, we are kind of a society like that, aren't we? We want change, but we want it to be at the snap of a finger.
Right. And it takes a long time to change. In order to form a new habit, there was a study that was done, and it was published in Science Magazine, and it takes at least 66 times of doing that new behavior in order for it to become a habit.
Really? So I have a higher rate of failure if I only do it 63?
That's right.
Okay.
66 is sort of the beginning of it. You know, and if you think about it, it kind of makes sense because you have to train your brain to do things in a different way than what it's used to. And that doesn't happen overnight.
Well, I know some of the popular resolutions that I always hear people say, it's weight loss. Somebody who likes to smoke, or you know what, maybe it's somebody who has issues financially, and they're going to promise this year that they're going to, you know, learn how to better, you know, deal with their money, be able to manage their finances better. What if it's, if somebody wants success, is it a matter of limiting the resolution? Should we look to do like a cleaning house of things that you want to take care of? If let's say you're somebody who smokes and somebody who, you know, you're 20 pounds overweight and you got credit card debt. Is it a bad idea to say, these are my resolutions for this year?
Well, I mean, I think if you're that person, then, you know, you have to really recognize that you got yourself into a place where any change is going to be challenging and you want to take it one thing at a time. It's almost like anything else. It makes sense, right? If you're starting a business, you know, you don't want to be in five different directions at once. You want to be focused. So I think that being focused and having a plan,
okay,
sort of an action plan as to how you're going to make this change real.
What do you think, Peter?
It's absolutely true. I remember when I quit smoking, it was one of the things that...
You used to smoke?
Oh, two packs a day, dude.
I was like,
I mean, I think a lot of people used to smoke. I think there's actually closet smokers.
Yes.
So it's funny, in the top list of resolutions now, quitting smoking isn't one of them, but that doesn't mean it's still not an issue.
How long ago did you smoke?
I quit in 88.
Okay,
one of the things that I had to do in my mind, I mean, I tried quitting several times, but
me too,
was set up a schedule and wean myself down to that point and just stop. And then once I stopped, like she said, it took a long time, probably 66 days, I don't know.
Mm.
But once I got past that point, my brain knew that I was past that point and I could stop. But it's the process of every time I tried to do it, I failed and I didn't want to fail. And you had to get over that failure feeling to go on with it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Just because you were off the wagon once doesn't mean that you need to throw in the towel and stay there. I think you need to build in some flexibility around, you might not be successful every day. So that's an excellent point. I think smoking is one of the hardest habits to quit because nicotine is so addictive.
Yep.
And so congratulations on quitting. It's a big challenge. It's not easy. But I do think that one of the things that they tell people who are trying to quit is you have to sort of move through the urge when you get it. You can't succumb to it because it will pass within a couple minutes when you get that urge.
When it comes to setting a goal, so we've identified that it's best to just kind of pick one thing that you want to. If you're going to set a resolution, if you're going to look to achieve betterment somehow in your life for the new calendar year, you pick a single resolution. Is it best to be specific when you set a goal? So
I think you have to be specific. So if you say, I want to get in shape, well, what does that mean? It has to be more around, I want to have a concrete goal in mind. You know, you want to lose 10 pounds by March, or you want to be able to run a mile, you know, by March, or something like that.
All right, something to definitely keep in mind. So setting a specific goal, don't just be like a blanket statement, I'm going to get in shape or I'm going to join a gym. Be specific. I think I want to lose 10 pounds and maybe set a date. I'll do it in 90 days or I'll do it in, let's say, April. By April, I will have lost 10 or 15 pounds. And that's something that is easy to achieve. And it's also, it's methodical. It isn't something you're trying to do overnight.
Right. If you're trying to do it quickly, it's not going to happen. In any kind of, I mean, you might be able to lose 10 pounds if you starve yourself for a week, but you're going to gain it back. So it's kind of, that's not the way to do it.
How important is your significant other when it comes to achieving or setting a goal and being able to be successful?
I mean, I think it's really important. I think that, do either one of you watch that TV show, This Is Us?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
so, you know,
awesome.
There's that example right there about that couple that's trying to lose weight, and, you know, one of them wants to when the other one doesn't, and that kind of thing. And it's sort of, you know, it can backfire if people aren't working towards the same goal. So I think it's important. That doesn't mean that your partner has to have the same, you know, goal exactly when you do, but I think they need to at least
support,
be aware of yours, and be supportive.
What's some of the things you could do? Let's say I'm able to achieve my weight loss by March. I've lost 10 pounds. Is it a good idea to reward myself, or is it a matter of setting a new goal?
Well, I think rewards all along the way, because change is so hard. So if you lose a pound or two, go out and do something good for yourself, something that, and that I don't mean food. I mean, you know, go get a manicure if you're a woman, or go, you know, spend some time getting a massage, or do something for yourself and build that in so that you recognize that you need to find a reward. Most, you're going to have to reward yourself. I mean, it's not like when you're an adult, nobody's going to do that for you.
Right. Peter, you have a question? I kind of put you on the spot.
You did.
All right.
Well, one of the things that I was interesting when I was reading some of the notes that you had was, if you fail, you have to get back to just go back and do it. You have to build in that day that you have a bad day. And then go off on it. And how would I do that if I wanted to lose weight or control something or change some habit in my life? What do you recommend when you have those bad days?
Well, you know, it's kind of the way you think about it. I think when you start the change, like, okay, I'm making a New Year's resolution today. I'm going to lose 10 pounds by April, as Kevin said. You have to think about, there are going to be days that I'm going to be under more stress and that I might not be on my diet that I'm setting up. And when that happens, I have to go right back to it when I'm over that stress period. I can't just give up. That's not how it works. People have down times in the change process. And I think a lot of times when people are thinking about food and dieting, it's sort of like, well, if I had one donut, I might as well have five because I broke the diet.
Exactly.
And they have to sort of accept that thinking.
I'll fight you for that last one, Kevin.
I absolutely will.
And not let their brain trick them, you know?
Well, I have to say is... Myself, I've always tried to, anytime that I've tried to set my mind to something, I try to at least, if I need some kind of positive reinforcement, I will measure and I will track how I've done. Example, we'll stick with the weight loss type, the weight loss when I've lost weight. And you know what, I'll write on the calendar. And I've, you know, there might be a couple of weeks that I'll plateau. You know, I didn't gain, but yet I didn't lose. But then I realized that look where I've come. How important is it to at least measure my progress or how far I've come from where I started the goal?
I think it's really important to measure your progress because that is the incentive to keep going. I mean, why would you work so hard if you're not making any progress? So I think sometimes it's hard to see what the progress is unless you measure it. And referring back to that TV show again, This Is Us, you shouldn't compare yourself to other people's progress. Like if you decide to do Weight Watchers or some other weigh-in program and your partner is in it as well and they are more successful, don't compare yourself because everyone is different in terms of how quickly things are going to change for them.
Okay, we're speaking with Dr. Kate Roberts. She's a great friend of ours. You can check out her website to www.drkateroberts.com. Also, she has a blog, and you can follow her on Twitter. Dr. Kate Parrington? Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
All right.
That's right.
All right. So let's say if I'm that person who I forgot to set a resolution for, you know, Saturday night when everybody was watching the ball drop and Mariah Carey trying to sing. And here we are. I find myself Monday night. Is it too late to invoke change in my life? Or do I have to wait another 364 days before I make change?
No, I mean, I think that's silly. I think that...
I know it was, but that's why I asked.
You think about changing every day. I think that the new year is like we were talking about earlier. It's sort of a mental state. Okay, with the new year, I'm really going to take this change seriously. But most of us, if we don't like something about ourselves, like my resolution is that I want to be more patient with my kids. It's not like I don't think every day, oh gosh, I got to be more patient. I do. But I think that now, you know, it's sort of like, okay, it's the beginning of the new year. I'm going to really be a different, more patient parent in 2017. I think that's what people think, you know?
So any progress, anything that you're going to do, it's going to be, it takes time. And again, it takes work. And, I mean, is there anything else? I mean, does it help to seek the help of someone like yourself, a psychologist, to help invoke? Or do you think that some people, it's, you know what, take it one day at a time. And if you're not successful one day, then start over the next day.
Yes. I mean, I think that if you try to do it on your own, if you, you know, there's a lot of support online, there's a lot of community support. You can have a friend or a partner who wants to support you. Any of that stuff. I mean, most of us have something we want to change. That doesn't mean we need to go to counseling. But, you know, if it's something that's interfering with your life and your quality of life over and over again, then you might consider getting some professional help. I think not only should you pick one item to change at once, but I also think you should try and do it when you're not under, like, enormous stress. Like, if you're already going through a divorce, that's not a time to consider losing weight or stop smoking or something like that. So do it when life isn't already in turmoil, even if it is at the beginning of the new year or not, because you're going to be much more successful when the rest of your life is stable than if it's not. I think you should choose a change that's meaningful to you. So don't, you know, stop smoking if it doesn't bother you, but it bothers someone else. It's got to be important to you because you're the one who's actually making the change.
Okay. Well, we thank you for joining us. Anything in closing in regards to our discussion regarding folks trying to at least try to, if they've set a New Year's resolution or they have tried to invoke change with a new calendar year, anything you want to say in closing to our listeners?
I think that, like you said, tracking it, you know, writing it down, making themselves accountable is an important component because that's taking it seriously. If you're going to do it 100%, you know? Don't just do it frivolously.
And again, if folks want to find, if they want to follow you, if they want to learn some of the latest things that you're working on, maybe follow your blog? How can they do that?
They can go to my website, drkateroberts.com, and from there they'll find Facebook and Twitter and all of that. You know, it's been great talking to you, and hopefully next time I come on, you can ask me how I'm doing with my patients and my kids.
We you know what? Maybe that's what we'll do next time we have you on. We'll have you on maybe in a couple of weeks.
Okay. Sounds great.
Sound like a plan?
It does.
All right. There she is. Dr. Kate Roberts has been our guest. And so what do you think? Now, are you going to set a New Year's resolution, or are you just going to kind of maybe think about doing some change and then invoking it?
No, I have a few things I'd like to get done.
I mean, quitting smoking. You quit smoking many, many years ago. That's kind of a big one.
Yeah, it was good. I'd like to control my weight better this year.
Me too. That's my one vice.
Yeah.
I'm not a drinker.
I think the food's okay. I just need to get out and exercise because I love to eat. I don't want to stop to eat.
It's the one thing that I do, and I do well.
And do a little bit more charity work, more than I did last year, because I slipped up a little bit last year. I wasn't paying attention, so I need to fix that.
All right. Well, it's time for us to segue from talking about your New Year's resolutions. And, do you realize that in just, 18 days, we're going to have a new president. Did you know that?
Mm.
I know you know that, but I'm just being a smarty.
No, I know.
Well, I was looking for folks to have on, and speaking with a good friend of mine, Mark Goldman, I'm like, I'm looking for somebody to talk a little bit about what's coming up in the new year. Maybe we could talk politics. And he made a suggestion of this gentleman. Larry, if you could play a little of this track. It's a song that's gone viral. It's a pro-Trump video. It's by Political Panic. It's about Make America Great Again.
Again. Make America free again. Make America great again. Definition of a true American. The only candidate in this election that can lead the country in the right direction. Trump. Build a wall for protection. Trump. Fix illegal immigration. Trump. Is America tough? Let's show the world that we had enough. Trump. Because we know the Clintons still is loud.
All right, so I believe we have on the phone line, we have Matthew DeMar. Matthew, is that correct?
What's happening? That's it. Matt DeMar, what's going on?
Matt, hey, listen, you're watching the video. Now, you're also known as Kid Panic, is that correct?
Yeah, many moons ago. Back in the 90s, I was a rapper, and I was a radio DJ in New York on KTU with RuPaul. I had a morning show, and I was a rapper, and I was on MCA Records. I used to tour with, like, Boyz II Men, Big Daddy Kane, groups like that back in hip-hop times, and many years later, I'm in business. I'm a real estate developer, and I'm in the restaurant and nightclub business. I do consulting for different restaurants. I actually even work with Donnie and Mark Wahlberg a little bit over here in New York and stuff.
Nice.
Consult with them, and I've been on their show a couple times.
Okay.
So those are some Boston guys I work with.
It's coming from a New York guy as well. I have to ask you. So what made you get back into music? What was it about Donald Trump that you like going, I got to put together a jam for this guy?
You know, I got to tell you, it's an interesting question. Everyone always asks me that. I'm 48 years old. I'm a businessman. And, it's like, wow, I've never seen a white 40-year-old businessman rap. And I laugh because I don't feel like I'm 48. But, yeah, I guess I am getting old now. And, what ended up happening was I was sitting here thinking about all the younger people today and how you're going to reach them. And, I live in Suffolk County, Long Island, and we're actually one of the only counties that actually in New York actually fully won for Donald Trump, and I like to think I helped with that, but I figured how to spread the word, and I figured the best way to do it with young people today is through music. And I felt like a lot of people didn't really understand everything was going on. I mean, I've never been a Democrat or Republican. I wasn't really into politics, but I always liked Donald Trump. When I heard what he had to say, I felt it was important to make sure that it got out and then make sure that people understood, because I felt that, this country has been in trouble, still in trouble. And, besides all the stuff going on with, people trying to get in this country and hurt us, and you know, the terrorists and stuff like that. Just the economy is so bad, and they always try to say, oh, it's getting better. Hasn't got much better. I mean, certain things have gone up, like the market and things like that, but still, it's still a lot of people out there struggling. I feel like everyone's got to work twice as hard. I don't know if you guys feel like that, but I feel like you maintain what you have, you got to work twice as hard.
Yep.
And I feel we need a change. And you know, I know Donald Trump's a businessman, and really, I believe that in government today, we didn't have any businessmen, and I think that's the biggest problem why governments, towns, villages, if you look around, I don't know how Boston is, but I know in Long Island, there's so many towns and villages that are just in so much debt and have so much problems because they have all these people that aren't businessmen running these places. And
right.
I think that, you know, if they had businessmen in, you know, in towns running stuff, it might change. And I just feel that having a businessman as a president, a real businessman, would be incredible, because at the end of the day, you know, Donald Trump's outspoken, whether you like him or not, but he's a smart guy. He understands business. He understands marketing. He understands just how to take you out of debt when you're in debt. And, you know, people were saying all this stuff about how he was in debt and all this stuff, but he understands the game. You know, remember, he's the guy that wrote the book, The Art of the Game. So, you know, I feel that he's somebody that could really make a difference in this country. And I was really hoping, because I was worried. You know, I'm worried as a businessman, and, you know, living here in New York, it's a very scary thing to see what's going on. The real estate market, the banks don't even, you know, we bail these banks out and they don't even lend.
Right.
I mean, it's ridiculous. So I felt I had to get out there, and I felt the easiest way was to do a funny song that was, you know, not making fun, but just really saying, hey, this is what's going on. And I had so many people hit me up on the internet and so forth and be like, oh my God, like, I never knew Hillary took foreign money. You know, you have a lot of these young people out there that they see all the stuff going on in the news, they don't know what to believe. And a lot of stuff was back and forth, and that goes on both sides, you know.
Sure.
But I just feel that I had by doing this song, if you listen to the words, even though I'm having fun and we're joking around, you'll see that we bring up a lot of points of things that are going on, and we kind of, I've had actually people, a lot of people saying to me, hey, you know what, I wasn't sure who I was going to vote, but then I switched after I listened to your songs. I really started thinking about it.
Wow.
And it got stuck in my head, and I started thinking about what you were saying. That's kind of what I wanted to do. I kind of wanted to get out to millennials and let, you know, and say, hey, listen, guys, wake up, you know. This is all of our futures, and if we don't pick the right president, we're going to be in trouble.
And you did it through music.
Yeah, it was awesome. Now you got to play the inauguration, Matthew?
You know what? I really want to. It's so funny.
That would be so cool to have rapping while they're doing after he takes the oath of office.
It's so crazy because I would really love to, you know what I mean? It's something I'd love to do, and I've you know, Trump actually knows who I am. I've heard from a lot of Republicans, I went to a couple of Republican events, and they like called me up, and they were like, "Oh, you know, he had this great song," and yada yada. But I still never met Trump, and I heard he liked the song, but I haven't heard anything. And I really love to play inauguration. That'd be like my dream, because I really, honestly, I didn't do this song for money. It wasn't like I put it out,
right?
To, you know, I did it out to make a point, and also I made it for him. You know, it's his theme song. When I heard "Make America Great," I was like, "What a great tagline!" You know, and I loved it. And I said, "I got to do something with it," and that's what I did. And yeah, I would love to play for him.
Well, you've got
maybe I could play at the White House. Never know.
Well, you got a ton of views. I mean, folks are loving it on YouTube. It's viral. Have you tried reaching out to him on Twitter? Because that's where he hangs.
I've had some people, some Republicans, that said they were trying to talk to him, and we're getting closer and closer.
Yeah.
I know that they were trying to figure out who they were going to get, and the news is saying different stuff. They were having difficulties. They don't know who. But then I just heard Kid Rock's going to be there, and, you know, so there's a couple of people. So, I mean, you know, I would love to. I mean, I'm still not giving up on reaching out, you know. I've got some people still reaching out, but I just don't know which way he's going to go with that. I would love to play, even at one of the after parties or something, just to, you know, show my support. I'm actually working on another song right now. I just finished it. We're going to shoot the video. It's called "Drain the Swamp," so that'll be coming out soon.
You're gonna have alligators and everything in it.
It's gonna be funny. Wait till you see it. It's gonna be really cool.
We'll have to give a shout out to Jeff Deal and see if we can get him to
the state representative. We actually had a local representative here in the Boston area who was Donald Trump's campaign manager for the state of Massachusetts.
Yep.
To, you know, kind of get the word out and promote what, you know, Donald Trump, what he was pushing for the big vote on November 8th. He was kind of the guy who, you know, here in the state that was on Twitter, who was getting the word out about the campaign and when he'd be around.
Pushing it for you guys. That was like John Laval for us here. John Laval is Republican. John Laval is Republican leader for Suffolk County, so he's real great. He's really did a great job. He's a big supporter of Make America Great song. He loves it, and he's been a lot of fun. I know he's been mentioning to them over there too as well. I listen. I would love to play for him. You know, I would even you know what, inauguration would be great. But even if he had a party down the road at the White House, you wanted me to come, I'd love to play for him. Just because when I did the song, it was in fun. It was him. And honestly, growing up, besides the fact, you know, me as a young businessman, that's why I knew since day one he was going to win. Everyone, even my parents, were like, "You're crazy." I'm like, "Nah, he's going to win." I knew it. I believed in him since day one because I have a friend that was involved. He has a big political company called Gotham, and they do PR and stuff, and they were helping launch originally with his first campaign when he first started at New York. And I knew when I heard that, I was like, oh my God, he's so great. I know he can win. Everyone's like, oh, I'm like, I'm telling you. I said, because the generation we grew up in, I said, I'm 40 years old,
yep,
and I grew up on hip hop. And in my generation, it's always about keeping it real. And the thing about it is, Donald Trump, whether you like him or not, he's real. So, like, he might say stuff. He don't care if you like it or not. He just keeps it real. And I think my generation, the ones below us, and that's how we probably ended up winning, is they're like, they're so sick of all the lies. They're like, you know what? Yeah, he might be a little crazy, and maybe he did some off-the-wall things, but he's a businessman, and he's just telling you like it is. And let's hope that it continues to. I mean, you know, he's one of the first presidents that still reached out on Twitter. You know, he's got his first 100 days that are coming up, and I'm really hoping that he's going to reverse this thing with Israel, because what Obama did with Israel is ridiculous, and it's terrible, and I hope he jumps right in and fixes that. And even with the Russians, you know, it's crazy what's going on. I mean, you know what? The Russians, they come over here. This happened in Long Island. I don't know if you saw it in one of the places in Long Island. They took their house or threw them out of their house. Did you
right,
hear about
right.
that?
Right, right. Yeah, they was like 35 diplomats that have been expelled from the country, right?
I mean, yeah, it's like ridiculous. Like, really, like, you're just starting to start. You're going to try to start a war with these guys? Like, you know, Donald Trump's is going to make friends with them. You know, he said openly he wants to have a better relationship with America. And then Obama does this crazy stuff to him. But you know what I like? Vladimir goes, turns around and says in the news and stuff, he says, you know what? I'm not going to do anything right now. I'm going to wait for Donald Trump, which to me shows that he's trying to be a gentleman. Because he did some stuff, too.
Well, I think he realizes that you have a lame duck president who has just a handful of days left, that he's, you know, he's occupying the White House before he moves out and goes into, you know, post-presidential mode, where he's out and doing speeches and campaigning for the next Democrat who runs for the White House in 2020 or 2024. And it's a good thing. Again, I think, first off, foreign relations are going to be key for Donald Trump in the first 100 days. I also think that some of the promises that he has made, I think he has to make good on. And I think it's a matter of working with the Congress and the Senate to figure out what's going on with health care. That's going to be important. I know that's one of the things that's on the docket.
Yeah, I think he's going to do a lot of stuff. I think that people are going to be very surprised. I mean, he's already been jumping in, and they were trying to say stuff. They were saying, oh, he's trying to act like he's president already.
Yeah.
But no, he's trying to do work. You know what the problem with D.C. is and the politics is all these guys are lazy, and they were all trying to fight against even some of the Republicans, because you know what? He's going to make everybody work. He's a worker.
Right.
I have friends that work for him and work with him. The man's nonstop. He's taking it so seriously. He's going to make these people work like they never did before. You have all these politicians that make these crazy paychecks that a lot of them do nothing. And now they're going to have to work for their money. And it's so great that he's taking businessmen that don't need the money, and he's bringing them in that are smart businessmen. He's bringing these big executives and smart people around him, which, you know, I think he's really going to, it's going to be so drastic. I really think if he continues to do what I believe he could do, he's going to probably be the best president we've ever had, and he's going to surprise everybody. I really do.
Now, do you know if he's a Mets fan or a Yankees fan?
You know what? I know he's a big sports fan. I think he was a baseball player, so I'd have to say he's a Yankees fan. I would have to say he was a Yankees fan, because I know he was. I believe he was almost a pro baseball player.
Right.
I think there was a thing about that, right?
Yeah, I think he played baseball in prep school.
Yeah, so he was like all about. He's like a big baseball fan. I'm sure he likes them both. I'm sure, you know. Okay. I heard he was a huge baseball fan for sure.
Now, are you gonna? Now, who's gonna produce? Who produced this video that we saw, "Make America Great Again"? And is it gonna be the same person who produces your next one?
So this video and the music was produced by myself, yep, and my partner Gray.
Okay.
And Gray's the one. If you go on YouTube, it's his page.
Yep.
And me and Gray been working together. You know, like I haven't done music in years, and Gray stayed doing music. He's a brilliant guy, a Juilliard graduate.
Well done.
Brown University. sickest violinist you've ever heard, seen in your life, but played like 10 different instruments.
Wow.
And we always done music. We did some stuff for TV, back stuff, just hobby. I always loved music. I never fully went away from it. I do some stuff in the back, but I never stepped forward. And he was always like, oh, you still have the same voice. Why don't you rap? And I'm like, what am I going to rap at 48 years old? I'm going to rap about my rent. I'm a landlord collecting rent. Rap about that someone didn't pay the bill at one of the restaurants. What am I rapping about? And I could, you know, and as much as I wanted to, I wasn't going to start rapping like, let me get my freaks at the street. You know what I mean? I don't know what I was going to rap at this age. So all of a sudden, you know, the politics thing came in. I started really being, you know, interested in it. And I said, wow, this is a whole other angle. And this is something I'm really interested in, really I enjoy, and I can make a difference. And, you know, it's clearly like in such a short period of time. I mean, I couldn't believe when I first did this, I'm telling you guys, I was just like, yeah, let me get it out. Maybe I'll get like 5,000-10,000 people looking in Long Island. I'll help Suffolk County, you know. When it started going crazy and the news was calling me and I was on Channel 12 and
yep.
all the news up here, I was like, whoa, this is so funny. I was like laughing. I'm like, this is hysterical. Like when I was trying to be a rapper back in the day, I didn't get this much attention.
Well, maybe you've created a new genre. This could be like poly rap.
Yeah, poly rap.
Poly rap. You can take that. That's a freebie. And you know what? This could be something. Maybe you rap about different things that are going on politically.
Yeah, I am. And believe it or not, after this, we like I said, next thing is drain the swamp. And, you know, and then I'm going to work on some other things. And so the video and the music, to go back, because I'm ADD and I'm all over the place. But
aren't we all?
Is produced and is by me and my partner, Grace. We do it. We write the song together. We produce it together. And then we shoot the video together. And Gray actually is the cameraman as well. So it's just, I mean, we do it all ourselves.
Yeah, no, it looks good. It's a good-looking video. And I actually enjoyed it. And when I saw it, I said to Mark Goldman, who I spoke with, who's a good friend of mine, and he sets me up with folks. He's like, hey, you want to have this guy on? I'm like, yeah. And so what happens now is once you put out a new one, actually, if you do end up playing the inauguration, you're going to have to be back on again.
100%. I'll come on anytime you want. Right. I'm going to do another one, and I'll get it out to you, and I love it. I mean, I love Boston. I mean, I was back in the day. I performed down on that street. We have all the bars and clubs.
Yep. Newbury Street.
I mean, back in the 90s.
Yep.
Still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Yep.
It's great. Boston was always great. I always had some, I had back, I mean, 20 years ago, I always had some great listeners from Boston. I always loved Boston. And I mean, I was there recently for real quick to see the Wahlburgers, but I haven't been there that much. But Boston's a great place.
If folks want to find out more about you, now do you have a YouTube channel or do you have a website?
No, if you want to find out about me, you can go on YouTube and just pull up Political Panic, Make America Great Again. I'm on Facebook as Matthew DeMar.
Okay.
Also on Twitter and Instagram, Matthew DeMar. And you know, if you want to see some of my old videos to get a good kick out of it, you can go on YouTube also and pull up Kid Panic, where I used to be and stuff like that. Or just my full name, Matthew DeMar, and stuff will pop up. But yeah, Political Panic, Make America Great Again. It's on YouTube. Drain the Swamp is coming very shortly. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Well,
I hope you guys enjoy it.
Well, listen, Matt, we can do this. We'll do this again. And I'll look forward to chatting with you down the road.
Yeah, you guys, great talking to you. Thanks for your time. God bless America. And I hope to see you guys soon.
There
you
go. Matt, Political Panic DeMar, joining us here on Monday Night Talk, talking a little bit about his video, Make America Great Again. We're going to step aside, and when we come back, we're going to take our game to another level. We're going to talk with Junior D'Amato here on 95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, welcome back to Monday Night Talk, our final talk segment. Now, if you've missed any of our segments this evening or you caught a part of it, what I've done now was we've kind of changed things up for the new year, is instead of doing separate segments, sometimes I've had people who said, oh, it's confusing, it's the whole show.
We're going to be a complete podcast?
It's a complete podcast. You'll have the opening theme. And you'll have the individual segments.
Score.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that easy.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm going to be famous.
Or infamous.
Infamous, yes.
Infamous.
I can't even say that
word. Our final segment, a good friend, this is a guy I love talking to, my on-again, off-again co-host, Joe Rossi, who's here from time to time, loves talking to our next guest, a gentleman who is a columnist for Gatehouse Media is you can take a look in the sports section. Usually there's Ask the Car Doctor, Mr. Junior D'Amato, joining us, auto expert extraordinaire. How are you, my friend?
Well, hey, good evening to both of you wonderful guys. A little bit of a cold, but we're here.
There you
and,
go.
And we've been inside all day. Yeah, well, you know what happens once in a while. But anyway, a happy holiday to everybody at the WATD family and all that kind of good stuff. And let's talk about some cars.
Yeah, let's first first thing I want to ask you about is here we are, we're in January, and we've been lucky so far. We've had, you know, some hit and miss storms. But, I mean, we've yet to have the frigid weather. And for those who folks who procrastinate, is there anything that we should do when it comes to prepping our car for the cold, the frigid cold weather?
Well, the basics are still something that's very much needed. And that is, of course, if the car is more than 3 years old, the battery's got to be tested. Oh, I'm not having any trouble with it, but you still have to get it tested. Mm. Because think about this. You put the key in the ignition, turn the key, and like instantly the car fires up.
Yeah.
There's no long cranking, stuff like that. So now you're out there and you put the key on and you're listening to the radio while the wife is inside the store. She comes back out, all of a sudden, click, click, click. What happened? Well, the cold cranking effort is like gone, and the battery is way too weak. So that's one of the things you need to look at. The second thing is, yeah, we haven't really seen any of the crappy cold weather and icy conditions yet. But when it comes to windshield washer fluid, $2, $3, or the $4 fluid is the way to go. Either the deep purple or the orange stuff, that seems to work really well. In fact, the orange stuff has a little Rain-X built into it, so it really does a really nice job cleaning the windshield as well. Now you get to the wiper blades. Where do you get them, and how do you buy them, and who can put them on? The majority of vehicles, anybody can probably replace a wiper blade. Then it comes into some of the crazier vehicles, some of the BMWs and Volkswagens and Fords. Believe it or not, you have to get the wiper blade right from the car manufacturer, because all the ANCOs, the TRICOs, the Bosches, and all the good stuff just doesn't fit properly, and some don't fit at all because there isn't an application for it. So you've got to be careful. Last but not least, when it comes to engine oil has come way down in price over the past couple, 3 years. I mean, I see some of the synthetic oil selling less money than the regular petroleum-based oil.
Right.
The problem is those oils aren't compatible with the majority of vehicles that are out there today. Same thing with oil filters. You can buy an oil filter for $1.50 to $3, or you can buy a factory oil filter for $5, $6, $7, or even $12 for some of the high-performance filters. You know, you can't be chintzy when it comes to your car. People certainly aren't chintzy when it comes out to dinner and having dessert.
Do you find that one of the biggest problems, cars are much more dependable, they start so much quicker and better, that people take advantage of technology and maybe they don't stay on top of maintaining their vehicles?
That's exactly where it's at. You don't have a problem until you go out there and you start the car and it's dead. Now, a couple of things moving forward. Buy three tires, get one free.
Oh, yeah.
You know, buy three pizzas, get one free. That's a different story. Who is going to sell you three tires and give you one for the goose egg? Unless it is underwritten by the manufacturer of the tire company, it ain't going to happen. So you got to be real, real careful when it comes to that kind of stuff. I'm driving a Lexus today, well, actually for the past 2 weeks. It's a GS 200. IT, which means that it's a 2-liter with a turbocharger, rear-wheel drive, and right on the back window, Mr. Rossi is going to love this, tire life expectancy is 15,000 miles.
You're kidding.
Nope.
Wow. My God, it's like having, I mean, it sounds like your brakes would last longer in that vehicle than your tires.
And we had a Mustang 350 GTR about, maybe 3 months ago, and I was lucky enough to get it before they put it away, because there's a bulletin right on the tire placard car. This car is not to be driven in weather conditions that are 45 degrees or colder.
Ooh.
Because the tires are so competitive, they just will not work. It's like driving on ice.
Mm. So that's
all kinds of crazy stuff.
So the 15,000 mile tires, so is it basically high performance tires?
It's a high performance rear wheel drive car. Yep, that's what it is.
Oh my.
And it's priced right around 50 odd thousand buckos. And you know, I am a bit disappointed I would much rather have had them put the V6 motor in that vehicle. I think it would have been a lot better all-around driving vehicle than having a turbo four-cylinder in there. But that's what they have chose to do. Mercedes is doing a lot of the twin turbo four cylinders, as is BMW's and all their, like, what, a 328, the 2.8 liter, or the 3 liter in the Mercedes, or 2.8 in the Mercedes, whatever they're calling it today. Again, four cylinder, twin cylinders, and you can really feel the four cylinder engine. It is nowhere near as smooth as a six. This morning, 8 o'clock, they picked up a Mitsubishi Mirage GT. Base price, 12 and change. Three-cylinder, Joe's going to love this, 78 horsepower.
Wow.
And you know it's a three-cylinder.
Wow.
I mean, the sound, the vibration, the whole thing, a great all-around town car. But to drive it back and forth from Lakeville to Hyde Park every day, I don't think so.
No.
You and I have had past conversations about some of the electric cars. And I don't know if you've come across any. And I actually had a chance to have a conversation with someone from one of the Mass Save, or I don't know if it's massenergy.org or whatever.
Well, one of the tree huggers. Go ahead.
But yeah, where they some of these organizations are trying to help get some of these vehicles off the ground and offering financial incentives.
Anywhere from $7,000 to $10,000 in rebates and incentives and credits. The difference between a tax credit and a rebate, the tax credit is we just take it off that $100,000 salary you make, so we'll take $7,500 off it.
Wow.
Big deal. It's basically nothing at all, number one. Number two, the trouble with the electric cars to date is the range.
Right.
And to recharge the vehicle, you've got to plug it in every night. And that's a real problem, unless they have the extender motor like GM has in a couple of their electric vehicles, which is not a bad way to go. Without having that electric extender motor, I personally would not buy one of these vehicles unless I was just driving, you know, 15 miles to work each way, and that was it. Then I can come home and feel good about myself. But sometime next year, you'll be able to pull your car into the garage and just shut it off, that little electric car, turn the key, and the mat that's underneath the car will magically, like a magic carpet, charge the battery in the vehicle.
Wow.
And that would be a whole lot better than getting out, plugging it in, and blah, blah, blah.
Here's my question, and that is with these electric cars, and one of the things that I've read online is that depending on the weather, depending on how cold it gets or how hot it gets, could also be the difference as to how these vehicles perform, too.
We have a bunch of electric vehicles over the past couple of years, and I would not drive it back and forth from Lakeville to Hyde Park. I did drive it from my Lakeville home to my Middleborough shop, and just reading the readout that should give me 75 miles, I think I maybe got about 55 miles. It was a Nissan Leaf, and I says, I'm going to drive this to Hyde Park. I don't think so. And then you got to plug it in, and it takes forever and a day to charge unless you have that 240 plug-in station.
Is there any particular car coming out this year that you're anticipating, anything that you've read up on or that you've gotten a little bit of an advance from the automakers?
Well, you know, basically what we're seeing now is something like the Nissan Rogue, the little SUV that is a very big seller. The women are buying that vehicle like crazy. It's easy to get in and out of. A four-cylinder with plenty of power, starts around $22,000, goes up to about $30,000 with all the bells and whistles. And we're seeing a lot more people now getting into the SUV market. The SUV market, the downsized ones like the Rogue and like the Escape, a tremendous amount of women are buying those things. These guys have given the Wrangler a run for its money. But still, the Wrangler is one of the best-selling vehicles with the worst service record out there.
Mm.
But people love them, and they retain their value.
Kind of going back to your one of your points you made earlier regarding tires, and there are many times that I see advertising or I hear advertising regarding buy three, get one, buy four. Actually, you buy three, you'll get a fourth one free.
Right, exactly.
How do they make up the price of the tire?
Oh, that's a great question. If you read the ad and you look at the small writing, when you purchase the installation package. That's number one. Number two, what a lot of people don't know, I went in to buy a Carla cell phone for Christmas,
yep.
And the guy says, no, you don't want an Apple, you want this LG or whatever it was. So I said to the kid, I says, the LG, huh, it's better than Apple. He's, oh, yeah. I said, let me ask you something. The kid, he turned beet red. I says, what did they give you, $20 extra for selling the LG? How did you know? I said, no, I want the Apple. That's the best out there. He says, yeah. I says, you know what? Here's a $20 Christmas bonus for you. Give me my Apple and give me all the crap that comes along with it. And he was so happy. But these tire companies, the guys that sell at the big box stores, they usually will get an incentive from the manufacturer to sell Kevin Tachi a tire that he doesn't want or doesn't need.
Okay.
But it's like selling snow to an Eskimo.
Right, because the Eskimo has seen enough of it, trust me.
Yeah, no. Real quickly on tires, let's say you buy a Goodyear, Michelin, Firestone, it doesn't matter. Or a Chinese brand, which are very, very good.
Yep.
You have to be very careful on the compatibility. That's like Kevin's my friend. Well, if Kevin wasn't my friend, we would be talking right now because we'd be not compatible. So the compatibility means, very simply, is that tire going to work in Kevin's car or any of our listeners' car? The more aggressive the tire, the better bite you'll have under you know, really crappy road conditions. You'll get a lot more noise. It'll have a tendency to scallop, and it will wear out sooner and cause a rougher ride and, of course, be much more noisy. So if you can get away with not going out when you get that snow on the ground, waiting, you know, 5 or 6 hours till the road is plowed, you can get away with a non-aggressive tire.
Something good to know. Something that I saw the other day that made me think of you, and I've seen the TV commercial a number of times about buying repair insurance. Have you come across this or had to deal with this in your shops?
We do a lot of third-party billing. That's what we call it. And on some of those third-party billing or extended warranties, some of them are very, very good. They really are.
Okay.
And again, some of them are very, very poor. You have to do your homework on it. Google it and check the complaints, check the Better Business Bureau. But if you really feel a little bit uncomfortable about keeping your car, you know, for another 4 years without whatever, without buying the insurance, then you have to think about it. Because insurance is very expensive for these vehicles.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. But I just found it was interesting how it was advertised. It was a well-constructed ad. And again, it promises that, you know, if you get this insurance, when it comes time that you need it, that they're there, they'll pay, they'll be the party that pays for the, you know, if you need a transmission or if you need...
Okay, well, let's go one step at a time.
Sure.
On a transmission, on an engine internal problem, maybe a starter motor.
Yeah.
Sometimes even wiper motors, power window motors are covered. The suspension, whether it be struts, springs, stuff like that usually isn't. Drive axles are covered, because I see this every day. It depends on the policy. If you're going to go in there and buy the policy, buy the better of the policy. Have A, B, or C, go with the A policy, because it's going to be a bit more money, and it's going to cover pretty much everything, number one. And when you're inquiring, ask them if they hold a labor restriction and if they hold a labor part restriction, which means that you cannot get a top quality or an OEM part. They want you to buy parts from, you know, discount companies versus buying an OEM part.
Right. Okay.
So these are all things you got to look at.
Any big plans for the new year? Before we had you on, we had Dr. Kate Roberts on talking about New Year's resolutions. You're not a guy who makes New Year's resolutions, are you?
What are you going to do? You know, you make a resolution. Okay, we're going to quit smoking. We're going to lose weight. We're going to stop drinking, and we're going to be nice to our neighbor. Come on.
Not necessarily in that order.
No, but, you know, you have to just... And people make a New Year's resolution. Why, I don't know. But God bless them. If that's what they like to do, hey, there's different strokes for different folks out there. But I think the main thing is to just go forward and try to save a few buckos. You know, if you can throw $5 a week, just a lousy $5 a week in a checking or a bank account, that makes a big difference, $20 a month. People don't think of it like that.
Yeah, it does go a long way, and you never know, it might come in handy.
Well, 10 years from now, that $5 a week was actually just, you know, a large coffee from one of the, maybe not even a large coffee, from one of these big brand coffee shops. But geez, that, you know, after 10 years, you got some serious money there, and you can always put it into a little CD or something. Sure, you're not going to make lots of money, but it's better than having nothing.
Amen. Well, you we want to thank you for joining us. We want to say hello to Miss Carla and the kiddies, and we look forward to having you back on in probably about a month or two.
Anytime you would like to do something, we always are happy to do it.
There he is, the one and only Junior D'Amato.
Okay, guys. Have a great night.
You as well.
Bye-bye, Joe. Yep, you too.
You got it. Gatehouse Media columnist. You thought you were Joe. Sorry, Peter. But, Peter, we want to thank you for joining us, being a guest, and also being... for Tiny and Sons being a great sponsor to this radio program. We love...
Thank you.
We love and we're proud to have you as a sponsor.
This is where you get the real news right here.
95.9 WATD.
It's correct.
Absolutely. And we definitely will have to have you back in a couple of weeks again.
Yes.
And we'll talk with you more, some of the things that you're doing.
We have the Beatles Mania coming up in January 28th.
We might have to talk about
that. The Spire.
We might have to talk about that.
Yes, we do.
Well,
I heard you like those.
I do.
Yeah.
That's all the program that we have here
thank you, Larry.
This evening. And we want to thank all of our guests for being here. Up next, of course, South Shore Live. Stan and the gang. Stan's in the house.
Stan.
Stay tuned for that from 8 to 10 p.m. right here at 95.9 WATD. And as I said, if you've missed any of our segments, we'll work diligently to put the whole show up.
The secret word is glass cleaner.
Is that the secret word?
Secret word.
All right, we'll have to definitely keep that in mind. But until next week at 6:15 p.m., that's all the radio program that we have here for Peter and
Happy
Larry.
Happy New Year.
Have a Happy New Year, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you.